Why can't APS just pay teachers more?
Can my child really learn in a classroom of 30?
Is public education as bad as the media and everyone else says it is?
Everyone has an opinion about Albuquerque public schools. But where do you go to sort out fact from fiction and rumor? Right here. Welcome to the APS Open Book Podcast with your host, Mark Goodrum.
Welcome to the APS Open Book Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Goodrum. Today we are talking to Raquel Reedy, Superintendent of Albuquerque Public Schools. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
I'd like to start out with first, Boston, Massachusetts. I'm originally from Boston. Mm-hmm. And talk to us a little bit about your journey, starting with your education career from Boston and how you got there.
Well, just like everything in my life, it just kind of happened. I don't know how else to describe that. And I talked to students in APS, minority students, students who, you know, are having difficulty kind of finding their way or fitting in. And I tell them my story. You know, I was born and raised in Laredo, Texas. I was an only child. Spanish was my first language. Mm. And that was a struggle to learn English. And in fact, sometimes now I find myself still pausing because when I respond, in my mind, I respond in Spanish,
sure.
So I have to translate to answer in English. But I did well in high school, and I thought, well, you know, it's good to be, I thought I was a big fish in a little pond, and the next thing it was going to college at the University of Texas, and that kind of scared me. I remember one class where I was, I think, the only Hispanic person in a class of 300 students. And I remember the first test, and I thought, there's no way I'm going to pass this. They're so much better than I am. You know, you always second guess yourself.
Sure.
And that first test, I remember they took the test, and they had the grades up, and I went up and I looked, and I thought, I know I didn't do well. And the first grade was a 97, it wasn't me. The second highest grade was a 94, wasn't me. The third highest grade was a 93, and it was me.
Yeah.
And then the fourth highest grade was a 72, and then after that, it was below 60. So almost 300 students got below 60, and there I was, and I remember standing there and thinking, okay, I think I can do this.
Sure.
The thing happened then as far as Harvard. One Christmas, I took my graduate exams, you know, to go to graduate school.
Sure.
And I think I did well. And so the next thing that Christmas, I got a letter from Harvard saying that they would like for me to consider going to the Harvard registering or applying to Harvard Education School. And I thought it was a big joke. And so I filled it out just as on a lark, really. I knew I had no chance. And next thing, the joke was on me because I got accepted and there was some money involved with that. So then, and this is what I tell the students, I had the worst summer of my life because I couldn't decide. I knew, I kept looking at the map, Massachusetts from Laredo, Texas, you know, and I had hives because I couldn't decide. It was so stressful. And in Hispanic families, girls don't really go away like that. And so my family, my mom wanted me to go to grad school, but not up there. And finally, I thought to myself, you're going to be an 80-year-old lady sitting in your front porch in a rocking chair in Laredo,
right,
wondering, what if?
Right.
And I thought, you're just going to go so that you won't wonder. And if it works out, fine. And if not, you gave it your best shot.
Right.
And that's what I tell the kids. It changed my whole life. That's how I ended up in Boston. And I taught in Boston for a couple years during the busing riots, then a teacher strike.
Yes.
So it was a real eye-opening experience. Changed my whole life.
Were you deciding to go into education prior to going to Boston? Was that the career you had chosen?
Oh, absolutely. My mother was an educational assistant in a special ed classroom. And so she did that for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And that inspired me. I would go and visit and help her out with the kids and visit the children. And I remember at one point she was helping in a classroom for blind and visually impaired children. Oh. And it really struck me. I like the idea of Braille. The kids were so bright. And so, yes. So I went into education, but elementary education with special education mm-hmm. for the visually impaired, general special education, and also I took all the coursework for bilingual education, too.
So now you've moved to come to Albuquerque mm-hmm. and a principal. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that experience.
Well, I started off as a special education teacher at Atrisco Elementary. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Was very, very impressed with how the city and the state also embraces all the different cultures. It was so refreshing for me to see that mm-hmm. and really encouraged me in the work that we were doing. I was teaching at Atrisco Elementary. Then I got a position in human resources, hiring special education teachers, mm-hmm. which was another eye-opening experience. And then I thought, I want to try my hand at being a principal. And mm-hmm. so I ended up being an elementary school principal for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the most rewarding experience teaching and being around children sure. and in schools is just about the healthiest job that you can have. The hardest.
Right, right.
But very, very healthy. And so I really enjoyed that.
I would imagine that foundation, that background, just adds to what you're doing now as superintendent. I mean, you can draw on those experiences. You know what it felt like to be in the classroom, mm-hmm. and you bring that to what you're doing now.
Absolutely. Those years were my formative years in the field, and I like to think, and I really truly try, mm-hmm. never to forget the work that's being done in the classroom. Every decision is tempered mm-hmm. by that. It's very easy to say, oh, we have to do it this way and fill out this form and take more time doing X and Y. But if you're not really close to the classroom and the work that's being done by those dedicated individuals, right. you lose sight of the fact of just how much they are already doing.
Yeah.
They want us to help them and support them and to work with them and to listen to what it is that they are going through. And that's how I function.
Mm-hmm.
Spending that quality time, listening to the stakeholders, the parents, the teachers, the principals, and seeing, okay, what is working, what is not working, how can we get it to work, you know? And so basically what happens is that it becomes a group decision. Everyone, we get that kind of buy-in. If you get that buy-in
right.
for change or for anything like that, that's 9/10 of it. Because
yeah.
They will move heaven and earth
right.
for something that they believe in.
Absolutely. And trying to make sure that the people that are on the front line, those teachers, the EAs, those principals, the administration that's out in the school every day, they know that you've been there,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's important for them to know that you have their interests at heart as you move forward.
Absolutely. I'm only one person.
Right, yeah.
but the fact is that I try everything that I can to ensure that they know yeah. that I'm with them. We have our Friday messages every Friday from my first week on the job.
Mm-hmm.
Every Friday, I try and select a topic, something that is unique to APS and something that we should be very proud of,
mm-hmm.
and just write about it
sure.
and share that with all the employees. And we have about 17,000 employees.
Yeah.
And I just get the best responses from that. People read it and they take it to heart. Again, it just kind of puts together this team effort. We're all in this together. This,
right.
That's the message that I want to give, is
right.
that it's not someone on high or a team on high or making those decisions
sure.
That affect your lives, your work lives, but it's all of us together moving forward and doing the best that we can for the children. The bottom line is, what can we do for the students?
You're listening to the APS Open Book Podcast. I'm Mark Goodrum, speaking with the Albuquerque Public Schools Superintendent, Raquel Reedy. Well, talking about the bottom line, the misconceptions that are out there, now's the time that you can put to rest some of those misconceptions that are out in the public of Albuquerque and around the country.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say about some of those things that you like to clear up?
Well, Albuquerque Public Schools is the biggest school district in the district, and actually it's the 35th largest in the country. Sometimes it is looked at as just a huge machine, and it is anything but that, because we are dealing with human beings and we never, ever lose sight of that. Our children are unique. Our teachers are unique. Every single child has special, unique needs. And our whole premise is to find that, to know the whole child and to move forward so that they can become the best adult that they can, so that they can lead happy and productive lives. I think it's kind of gone away a little bit about the size of the district. Yes, it is big, but there are economies of size. We have some very unique programs that we can only have because of our size.
Right.
Many families move to Albuquerque because of the uniqueness and the special projects and programs that we can offer students who have special needs or just need unique learning opportunities. We divided the district. As we look at the district, you look at, in the past, the district was run in that all the elementary schools kind of worked together, had their meetings together, but they really didn't meet with the middle school principals, and the middle school principals really didn't meet with the high schools. There was some interaction, but not the kind that is really needed for a cohesive movement from kindergarten all the way to graduating from high school.
Right.
So what we did is we did two things. We looked at what is called clusters. Yeah. And so, you know, you have feeder patterns. We looked at the feeder patterns. And so then we looked, it would be like within an area or a region of the district, we would look at four feeder patterns. So like four high schools that have all the schools that feed into them. And we made that a zone.
Zones.
We ended up making four zones. And they're very unique zones. And there's an associate superintendent who oversees that with the team. What I love about the zones is that it makes things manageable.
Mm-hmm.
What I love about the zones is that the community feels a stronger connection to the schools, and the fact that the elementary schools are talking to the middle schools, are talking to the high schools, that's how they meet every single month.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that the parents know that. And so the children themselves, you have this communication and this connection, and it makes things much smoother, and there is the community truly embraces that set of schools. The other thing that we've done is that we've established what we call rounds, kind of like doctor's rounds, you know, in the hospital.
Yeah.
And as we look at the clusters, every month, the cluster principals and program specialists go to one of the cluster schools, whatever school they decide to go, talk to the staff, and they say, what are you working on? What are your areas of focus? Well, we're working on, I'm questioning. When we're looking at our data, and that's another thing we're doing, looking at data all the time. Look at our data. Our teachers are really only using yes and no questions, questions that can be answered by a single word. And that, we find, it really doesn't stimulate a child to think through a whole issue or a problem and the different components that make up this question. So that we're looking at questioning. We want more in-depth kind of questioning. And we said, fine. So then what happens is that we go, there's teams of three in this group, so it's about three to four teams of three educators from around that cluster that go into the different classrooms, and they go in and they observe, and then they take notes, and then they come back. When they're going in to observe, they look at, one person is in charge of looking at the teacher and seeing how the teacher interacts with the children. Another person is noting the children and their reaction and responses. And a third one is looking at just the whole culture of the classroom. Then they take notes. They come back. All those little teams come back, and then they talk to the staff. And then they say, you know, we saw this and we saw that. And that's when the dialogue takes place. And that's when the sharing of information. A principal that's maybe in one of these small teams will say, you know what? At my school, we're doing X and Y, and we've seen a great improvement. Why don't you come and visit? go and observe this, you know, these classrooms in this other school. And that communication piece has been totally invaluable, just invaluable.
Yeah.
Another thing that we do that I don't think people realize, just how closely we monitor and help support the schools, is that every single school looks at their data and spends quality time. In fact, we have experts that go in that help you diagnose the data that comes out as far as, you know, students' progress or lack of. Mm-hmm. And they then turn around and the school team and the teachers write a 90-day plan.
Oh, okay.
So the 90-day plan has areas of focus that they are truly looking at, and they outline exactly what they're going to be doing for this 90-day period, how they're going to monitor it, mm-hmm. and then we come back and we see how things are going, and just keep very close tabs. Sometimes it's, you know what we thought we want, you know, we thought was going to fly, right, really didn't. Work. But you know what? If we tweak it this way, let's go this other route, or let's fine tune this strategy,
sure,
that we thought was going to work. Again, very inclusive, and it really keeps that dialogue going. And the teachers are very, very involved, and they keep track, and they discuss among themselves. It's just a wonderful thing that we're doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Keeping the communication open from the kindergarten, elementary school, all the way up, and the dialogue going on between.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
addresses the conversation about size, the size of the district.
Mm-hmm.
You've taken the whole district and said, okay, let's bring it down into the neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
and the areas. And I'm sure that the parents can see that happening within mm-hmm. the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you mentioned that came to mind was that being a large district, like you mentioned, comes some funds and comes the capability of helping the children.
Mm-hmm.
And if we went to a smaller situation with the district, some of those needs may not be met.
Well, exactly. And although small districts have their issues too, they struggle with trying to serve unique and, you know, properly.
Yeah.
And again, having the funding and the programs and the staff, and we all have our issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the wonderful thing of being part of the Association of New Mexico Superintendents is that I get to meet and talk to all 89 superintendents. And you know, it's just a very powerful thing. And it's not a matter of size
mm-hmm.
so much as it is being able to discuss issues. We all have a lot of the same kinds of issues. Safety certainly is a big one.
Mm.
And we help each other. And again, I think that is the root of why things are moving forward for us in many ways. We're part of the team.
Right.
We're not separate from or better than or anything. We've got the same issues.
Sure.
And together, working together, I think is a beautiful concept.
My grandmother used to say, you get more done with sugar than you do with vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And getting to know you, I really like the positive attitude that you have toward the district
mm-hmm.
and toward the teachers. You mentioned safety, and we got to start with that
mm-hmm.
with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a look at that when we come back from the break. I'd like you to talk a little bit about the safety aspect with the schools,
mm-hmm.
if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Elizabeth Armijo of the Albuquerque Public Schools Board of Education. Are you or someone in your life close to graduation? If so, Albuquerque Public Schools has a great new resource for you. Our new scholarships page can help you find local, state, regional, and national scholarships, information about financial aid, and scholarship search engines. Log on to aps.edu and enter scholarships into the search bar. You can also talk to the college and career counselor at your high school for scholarship and financial aid information. Take some of the work out of mapping out your college career. Your future is waiting at aps.edu.
How does a large, diverse, and urban school district like the Albuquerque Public Schools give its students the best possible chance at success in life? With a lot of help from our friends like you. Hello, I'm Shannon Barnhill with the APS Education Foundation. We strive every day to expand the academic possibilities for our students and teachers. Not all children have access to art, music, sports, and science. We help bridge some of those gaps. We create, support, and rejoice in bringing new experiences of wonder to as many classrooms as possible. If making a difference in the lives of our students and teachers is something you'd like to be a part of, please consider joining our efforts. You can find more information at aps.edu.
Okay, we're back from the break, and we're talking to Albuquerque Public Schools Superintendent Raquel Reedy. And before the break, we were getting into safety. And of course, that's a huge, and it should be, a huge discussion among the district and the country. What's going on with the district with safety in the schools?
I'm glad you asked that. The fact is that safety is paramount for everything that we do. Parents, of course, that's one of their first questions. One of the interesting things is the students themselves are very aware of what is going on across the country and, you know, different incidents that occur. And of course, it's something that they worry about. And we've gone to the source. In fact, I have a group of wonderful students, representatives from each of the high schools and special schools that are part of my superintendent student academic advisory council, student advisory council, the SAC group. And we asked them, what are things that concern you? And the very first thing that they brought up was safety.
Sure.
They weren't sure. They didn't feel that they were involved in planning and in making those sorts of kinds of decisions. Yeah. They felt they were in the dark. In the past, across the nation, the whole thing was that a bell would ring or some kind of alarm, and then it would be a lockdown, and then you'd have to stay in the classroom and not move until you were told that that it was okay to leave the classroom, and that didn't sit well with them. Mm-hmm. You know, they felt, you know, why should we stay in the classroom? And as it happens, they're right in step with what police and security folks across the nation were saying.
Right.
Perhaps this is not the way to do this. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, we are working on, and actually we already put in place, a different approach to a lockdown.
True.
And so that, again, it depends on the situation and it depends on where the activity is going on, but it is something that we alert the classrooms about.
Mm-hmm.
So that it is, if something's happening in a whole other part of the school building far away,
mm-hmm.
then the students and the teachers who are on the opposite side know that that they need to run and they need to get out of the area.
Mm.
And that was a great relief for the students. So
right.
So that we trained them on this. Of course, the teachers have been trained. We've gone to every single school and done that.
Is that dealing with the ALICE?
ALICE, yes,
program?
Exactly. Mm. And it seems to go, parents are pleased with that also.
Mm-hmm.
So we shared that information with the parents because we all need to know.
So
they're all our kids.
Talk about, that was after I retired. So I'm not too familiar with that whole system. How does that work with ALICE?
Well, what it is that it really leaves a lot of discretion to the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like as I said, so when the alarm goes off, then a message is given.
Oh, I see.
That says whatever incident or there's an area of concern,
right?
However we phrase that, is in such and such location of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they know immediately that if you're in the far opposite,
right,
that, you know, if you're right there, then you know you need to stay in the classroom. But it offers some flexibility so that the individuals can
yeah.
make the right decisions as far as keeping safe.
That brings me back, you brought in a memory, because when I was teaching, like you said, we had to do the lockdown. I had to literally open my door of the band room, lock it from the outside,
yeah,
close it, and then be quiet,
right.
You know, and the kids
right.
had to get quiet about it.
Those days are gone.
Yes.
So one of the things that we did, if I can fill you in on that, is that we were able to get a grant, some allocation for strengthening, hardening our mm-hmm. schools. And the very first thing that we did, because it was the second thing, mm-hmm. aside from the students' concerns, but the very first thing that we did is we looked at every single one of our doors. Mm-hmm. And I was shocked to learn that so many of our classroom doors could not be locked from the inside.
That's right.
That was a no-brainer. And so what we did immediately is that we found the safest, strongest door mm-hmm. Handle and lock that could be locked from the inside. And right now, all of our classrooms have been equipped with that. So, in fact, I think we were able to do this within a three-month period. We rushed it because mm-hmm. we knew that this was vital.
Right.
Our teachers needed to have that security, and so we did that immediately. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we're looking at is entryways. Mm-hmm. As we can and as funding
allows
mm-hmm. We're looking at building or refurbishing atriums mm-hmm. so that there is kind of like an entry where it's, in essence, it's a two locked doors
right.
that a person would have to go in through to be, in order to get into the building. Also, we're building fences
right.
all the way around schools, again, to make sure that there's only one way to get into the building and mm-hmm. that it is monitored very closely. Cameras, we're mm-hmm. updating our cameras. We had some really old-fashioned cameras,
sure.
and now we've got some very good quality ways of monitoring outside activity and activity within the building itself. So
right.
all those things are ongoing and a priority for us.
And it takes money.
Uh-huh.
And Albuquerque Public Schools is Albuquerque, and Albuquerque is the school district as well.
That's right. That's my mantra.
Yeah, right. So as a citizen, I mean, if I want the children to be safe,
mm-hmm.
I have to open up my wallet a little bit at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you mentioned that stirred a thought was that when you talked about the students being in on the conversation, that's great because it's not reactive. There, you're thinking ahead
mm-hmm.
and trying to get a barrier put in place before, God forbid, anything terrible happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great, and the kids are a part of that. I would imagine the teachers and administration as well, and everybody's coming to the table with
yes,
different
absolutely.
Ideas.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you addressing that. Let's move to the classroom. You know, the quality, I know for a fact after 33 years, we've got great teachers in Albuquerque Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I see them. I was just at, I was a former band teacher, and I was just at the festival a couple of weeks ago. Great teaching going on, stimulating the children to think in depth. Mm-hmm. Not just the yes and no kind of answers, those type of things. Talk about that, what you've seen in the district.
That's the proudest part.
Ring the bell.
Yeah, it really hits a soft spot for
sure.
me because I was a teacher and I've worked with teachers and
Absolutely.
In schools and children my entire career. We do have some of the best teachers in the state. The state has wonderful educators all across the board. APS is just like that.
Mm.
And in essence, I think a true reflection of the state. Teaching is not a career so much as it is a calling.
Mm.
It is one of the hardest jobs. You think back in the 50s, Eisenhower years, you know, that sort of thing. Nothing can be more different than
right.
how it was back then.
Even since the time I've retired.
Even since that time, a lot of good things have come down. We really need, as educators, we need to look at the unique needs of our students.
Mm-hmm.
They come to us with so many unique facets to their life.
Mm.
And it's not just a matter, they're not robots. They don't come in and we open a book and you read the Dick and Jane book or whatever book that you have and they learn to read and then they're off. That's not the case anymore.
Sure.
These are wonderful individuals. Our children come with just a variety of life skills and a variety of lack of life skills, mm-hmm. and all of these things we need to meet at the door.
Sure.
And we need to, as educators, look at that child and get to know the whole child. When you get to know the whole child, you get to know the family of
right.
that child
right.
and the background of that child. And not question, but support.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key. Because if a child comes and they have not eaten breakfast,
mm-hmm.
or they know it's Friday and they're not going to have food for Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
Schools, I don't think people realize the kinds of things that schools do. Mm-hmm. We have schools that have backpacks that are full of food
exactly.
for the family to eat on the weekend. And
mm-hmm.
the kids are so proud and happy
mm-hmm.
that they can come home
mm-hmm.
Friday afternoon and look, Mom, we have some spaghetti here.
Right.
And, you know, whatever it is, that's not teaching reading or
right.
or math. But that is equally as important
mm-hmm.
because this child will not be able
mm-hmm.
to feel that or be ready to learn about reading or long vowels or
mm-hmm.
definitions or
True.
Whatever if they're hungry or if they're worried about their baby sister back home.
Right.
So that is part of our areas of focus. We're looking at academics. We're looking at early childhood, which is essential. We're looking at attendance.
Right.
If a student is not in school, they're not learning.
Right.
And we have a big issue with attendance, so we're really focusing on that also.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at family engagement,
mm-hmm.
again, in our effort to look at the whole child. And we're also looking at college to career, improving our students'
mm-hmm.
Opportunities as far as moving forward in their lives. The fact is that we're working on every single part of this. So as we're looking at the whole child, we're also moving forward with putting together more and more what we would call community schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a movement that is really pushing and moving nationally. We really have a wonderful program here in New Mexico as Family Schools. Albuquerque has embraced the concept of Family Schools. We're working with the city, with the university, with the county. We're working collaboratively with many, many different entities in order to fulfill that need that our
right.
students come for. They come with societal issues.
Right.
And our teachers are asked every single day to deal with the things about, my dad was put in jail, I'm
right.
very sad. Well, obviously you're not going to have a good day at school today.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we need to support that work. Again,
mm-hmm.
Albuquerque is APS and
right.
APS is Albuquerque. All of us as citizens need to be able to support
yeah.
our students and help them move forward, which comes back to your question about
mm-hmm.
teachers.
Sure.
They are working miracles every single day.
Yeah.
And I am not exaggerating.
Absolutely.
Their heart is in the right place, and they're doing everything that they can to support these children, all children.
Mm-hmm.
Some children come and they'll say, my parents have gone to Europe,
mm-hmm.
and I'm alone with my grandma or something, and I feel sad, or whatever it is that they come to us with,
right.
we must be prepared to support them on that. There's a lot more documentation that is required
mm-hmm.
legally, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, you know, sometimes we need to make sure for the child's future that we have documentation of what we did, what strategies were being used so that there's a smooth transition to the next school or the next grade or and so that the
right.
parents are well aware of exactly what is going on in the classroom so and what their child is learning.
Yeah.
So we have some wonderful, wonderful staff, and I just can't praise them more. I'm just so proud of them.
You're listening to the APS Open Book Podcast. I'm Mark Goodrum, speaking with the Albuquerque Public Schools Superintendent, Raquel Reedy. I was at the dentist a couple of weeks ago
mm-hmm.
getting a crown. And the dentist that I was talking to, he went to APS, went to Rio Grande High School.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the workers there is a former band parent of mine. And her daughter is a new teacher. I think she started this year or maybe last year,
mm-hmm.
Rachel. And she loves teaching. She's at a high school. And what a great commercial you just gave
mm-hmm.
for going into teaching. You know, it's just, I don't think I would have done anything as well other than teaching when I got mm-hmm. into it. And you would, I would imagine, of course, urge others to get into teaching as they're coming out of high school and going into a career.
It's interesting that you mention that, because there are so many different opportunities now for a young person that is thinking about possibly going into teaching, sure. or wants to know more about teaching or whatever. We have worked very closely with UNM. We have a grant, and actually we had a grant that helped us start what we call teacher interns. Mm-hmm. And it's working together closely with UNM, and it's we identify 25 individuals who have college degrees and want to go into teaching. Mm-hmm. So they become full-time teachers with a supervisor that works with them, or another classroom teacher that is there with them. They are paid a salary.
Wow.
They are paid some money, whereas before it was like,
yeah.
you may be starving to death,
you're
but the fact
own.
Is you're on your
yeah.
own and you have to do the student yeah. teaching. That's no longer, that's not that.
Yeah.
And
I remember
so
those days.
We have
yeah.
a waiting list for that.
Wow.
And the grant ended, but we feel so strongly about this program and how unique it is, and really truly wonderful, and encouraging people to come into this field, that we have taken that on, and we're going to continue this because it has come up with some great, wonderful results. They are in schools where they may very likely end up teaching themselves.
Sure.
So it gives them an opportunity to know the community and to have that kind of support yeah. as they move in the career. The other thing that we're doing is working with CNM. We're looking at high school students. We have a very unique program with CNM. It's called College Career.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's not far from here, mm-hmm. Here in CNM, and near KNNW.
Sure.
And the students that go to College and Career are the kind of students that is truly motivated. They're truly motivated to be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come to the CNM campus. They take coursework that helps them complete their high school right. requirements.
Right.
But at the same time, they're taking coursework at CNM that they get dual credit for.
Right.
So right now, actually this morning, I got an invitation for graduation for seniors in this program that are graduating with their high school diploma and an AA degree.
Wow.
And we've expanded this program now for ninth graders, and mm-hmm. we already have a waiting list of ninth graders that want to come, and we're going to start that next year. So it's 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, and they can graduate with both things. And we're working very closely. We're expanding it so that students can take education classes and have that count specifically if they go to UNM or another university in education, so they get a 2-year head start.
Wow.
Think about the savings on tuition.
Absolutely.
This program is free. It's for high school students.
What's it called?
It's called College to Career.
College to Career, okay.
And so we really are pushing, because it is a wonderful field to go into.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once a person steps in and actually sees the kind of work and the dedication and the results you get to see from one day to the next, you can see a child change,
right.
you know, physically sometimes.
Yep.
It's just a wonderful selling point.
Sure.
So that's why I encourage also citizens. You know, we have citizens here in community members here in the city that drive by these schools
mm-hmm.
and really don't know, and just have an image, or maybe somebody in the neighborhood has said X and Y, and it may be true, it may not be true, but
right.
they never find out for themselves.
Right.
That's all I ask. All I ask is for our community members just to take a minute and to pop in and spend some time at a school, and you will be amazed.
Because if I sit at home and watch the news,
mm-hmm.
then I get this one-sided view. You know, all kids are doing this, blah, blah, blah. And those, the kids that I worked with in my career
mm-hmm.
are not the ones you're going to see on the news.
Exactly.
They're the ones that are going out, being productive, and coming back and helping out.
And they're not the sound bites.
Yeah. Exactly.
They're not
yeah.
the sound bites. And unfortunately, because, you know, we have so much media and there's so much back and forth with the
sure.
computers and all this and that, the fact is that that's why I challenge everyone. Yeah. Take a minute, take an hour, half an hour, go during your lunchtime or whatever.
And it
go
doesn't
and see.
Sell. The thing that sells, is that kid that's on the news and so forth.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I would love to see people taking that time and actually seeing for themselves and making up their own minds.
The big part, the number one part of this are the parents. Mm-hmm. It starts with them. And so I'm coming to Albuquerque. I'm new to the city. I don't know the district very well. I've gone online, blah, blah, blah. How can I get involved other than the typical, volunteering in the school system? What other things can I do as a parent?
There's a lot that you can do as a parent. And my mother worked full time, and so she wasn't able to volunteer. But she always kept tabs on how I was doing as best she could. You want to really know your school. Get to know your principal, the nurse, the counselor. Take a few minutes, even at registration time or something, to get to know those people or drop in, make an appointment. I know they're very busy people too, but they would drop everything to see you. Sure. And spend some quality time explaining your expectations, talking about your child. Let them know your child as a person. Right. What are the unique little characteristics that they have? Or, what panics them? Right. Give them that kind of information, and I guarantee that they will fly with that. Huge, giant step in helping your child in that transition. The other thing, as a parent and as the child gets older, watch the friends. Know who your child is hanging around with and know them and know their parents and spend that effort, because I guarantee that it will help in his or her entire life, making sure that they are with the individuals that you want them to be influenced by.
Yeah.
And so those are the things. Keep close tabs. Write notes to the teacher. Do whatever it is that you need to do in order. Say, we had Johnny was sick, threw up last night, or whatever it is, so that the teacher knows that you're there and you know that the teacher is there. And it becomes a concerted effort, to support the work of teaching the child.
You're listening to the APS Open Book Podcast. I'm Mark Goodrum, speaking with the Albuquerque Public Schools Superintendent, Raquel Reedy. Can I share a story with you?
Uh-huh.
The advisory classes in the schools. Mm-hmm. And so we had an advisory class, and then we had the parents coming in. And the teacher is supposed to not really say a word when the parents come in. It's supposed to be, at least when I was there, the student and the parent. So I can't remember the young man's name, but he wasn't in my band. He was in the advisory class. Anyway, he comes in, and Dad came in, sat down. We're sitting there, and the child is supposed to get out their packet and show them their grades, first period, blah, blah, blah. Well, this young man, he wasn't doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting over on the side, and the father leans toward him, and they were just about this close.
Mm-hmm.
The hair on the back of my neck started to stand up a little bit, and he says, "Now, I just got out last week." And so the young man didn't say anything, and he said, "I don't want you to be another me. I want you to be a better me."
Oh.
Now, I cry at the drop of a hat.
Me too.
And the young man, true story, the young man put his head down, and the father said, "You're going to get these grades up." And it was pretty intense. As a parent, the buck stops there.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers, we all can do, and this is from a person when I was younger, I had teachers come to my rescue, but that was a huge impact on me as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And a father that stepped up, and I don't know what happened. They went on with their life. I went on with mine.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
You're absolutely right. And that's about expectations.
Sure.
And the teacher has expectations, but by golly, the parents have expectations.
Absolutely. Yeah.
From the crib on. And if that message isn't clear, or if that message is mixed, it's not going to help.
Yeah.
So we have to make sure that as parents, that from the very, very beginning, we make sure that they know what is expected.
Absolutely.
My mom, I have to tell you a story.
Sure.
When I, you know, a toddler, you know, she'd read, you know, Sleeping Beauty or some, you know, fairy tale or something like that. And in Spanish, of course, Blanca Nieves or Snow White. But she would always, and I didn't know because I wasn't reading, she was telling me the story or reading the story from a book, and she would end the story with, "And then the prince came and kissed Sleeping Beauty, and she woke up and she said, 'Let's go to college and get a career.'" All the fairy tales ended that way. And even something as small as that delivers a very strong message.
Right on.
So, and I share that sometimes with parents and when I talk to them, because it really... really impressed me as an adult. I didn't know any better as a child. I did the same thing with my daughter.
Yeah.
And I remember she had an argument with a little girl in kinder because she said, "No, they went to college and got a career." She said, "No, they got married and lived happily ever after." No.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we talked about now. Let's talk about the future. What do you see for APS and the district in the near future and moving forward?
I think we're on a good path. We're organized, we're looking, and we have a lot of unique different programs, like I said, as far as things that we've changed organizationally in order to impact the learning of students. We're known nationally. I'm part of the board of directors of, the executive directors of Council of Great City Schools, which has existed for 50 years, huge standing in the United States as far as the 70 largest school districts in the nation. And we're a player in that. They come and they, you know, they come and observe. We do presentations. We go to their conferences and they come to us. For instance, you know, being on the board, executive board, because they feel that we're in a unique situation as an urban, suburban, rural district, which is exactly what describes us, and that we can help them help other large districts with the issues that that we're working with and in the paths that we're dealing. And they offer, you know, we reach out to them and they reach out to us, but I'm very pleased with that. I see us as moving forward and seeing some very positive things for the future for APS. I'll give you an example. We have been able to do the changes that I talked to you about, the four zones and the rounds and all that. That's the first step. And that's what we were able to do in the midst of horrendous budget cuts.
Sure.
It's just incredible how much we had to cut. So consequently, we haven't been able to do other things that we know are vital, you know, to moving the district forward. So the next step is going to be looking at, as we're looking at students and student needs, we need to see teachers and teacher needs. And we need to see what skills do they need in today's world in order to do the best job that they can do. Professional development. We need to be able to offer them cutting-edge professional development in quality settings, treating them as the professionals that they are, and supporting them in the hard work of doing that. That's the first step, making sure that our teachers have the grounded, solid foundation so that they can offer different kinds of strategies for students that are struggling and actually get into the real beauty of teaching. And, you know, I can foresee that that's going to be something that's going to be our next step, and we're going to move pretty quickly on that, and it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Before I let you go, share with our listeners about Peanut.
Peanut, yes, how cute. Anyway, I'm just thrilled to death. I'm grinning from ear to ear. So let me tell you the story, the background. So we have one daughter, Alexis, who's now living in Pennsylvania, married, very happily married, and missing New Mexico because of the weather, and you know how that is. But anyway, when I found that I was pregnant with Alexis, I remember I was at one of the malls, and it was near Christmas, and so I looked, and there was Christmas ornaments. And I thought, you know, when this baby's born, I want to have that first Christmas ornament.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got a little carried away, and then I went and I bought 21 Christmas ornaments. And but that first one was very special. But anyway, what I did is once the baby was born, I would put Alexis's name and then the year, and then I would wrap it up. And then we put it away, and every year as we were decorating the tree, she would so look forward to that mystery ornament.
Sure.
And it's just a tradition. So when she got married and moved away, I gave her the 21 ornaments so that she would have a set for her own Christmas tree. So when we went to visit, the last time she told... she said, "We, you know, here's our tree and all this." And I said, "Oh, that's wonderful." This was during the holidays. And she said, "And here's a special ornament." And I said, "Really?" And it was a peanut. And it turns out that she's expecting a baby.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They call the baby Peanut. And there's that first ornament. And she's buying a whole set of 21 for Peanut.
Right.
And so the tradition continues. And I suspect she's also going to do the tradition of the fairy tales where they went to college and got a career. But it's really sweet. And it's just a sweet part of life to see that. And I'm just thrilled to death and happy as can be.
Sounds like you're living heaven on earth there. It's a tough job, though, but, you know, I can see the passion in you and the drive to make the district better. And it's refreshing. I appreciate you the time.
Thank you.
Giving us today.
This is great. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, we wouldn't have been able to do this without the APS Media Office. We appreciate them. KANW, Michael Brasher, and Kevin Otero. And you, the listener, we're glad you took the time to listen while you're driving down I-40 or making dinner. Come back next month. We'll have another topic. You can contact us. We sure would like to hear from you at podcast@aps.edu. With that, we want to say thank you again, and don't forget, always keep smiling.
This podcast is produced by Albuquerque Public Schools and KANW Public Radio. Special thanks to KANW Program Director Kevin Otero. Stay tuned for more meaningful conversation in the months ahead.